Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Alex Hilliard, 16 years of career experience, a backstep firefighter on Squad 41 for, at least in my opinion, the most famous initials within the American Fire Service, FDNY. My discussion with Alex was a great one regarding his journey into becoming a firefighter, the way things are done within the FDNY, and what I thought was most important in that all you have when becoming a firefighter is your last name and the reputation it holds. I loved having Alex come on, and he's willing to do a part two, so stay tuned for that. With that, I present Mr. Alex Hilliard.
All right, Alex Hilliard. I got into the fire service all the way back in kindergarten. I grew up in Shorewood, Wisconsin, and we went to the firehouse for a visit. And this guy, Ben DeStefanis, slid the pole and got dressed, got on the rig. They started it up, and I was hooked. The village of Shorewood is small, about a mile square. He walked to school. I was fortunate enough that when I was in elementary school, I walked past the firehouse every day. And back when that was going on, it was the Shorewood Fire Department. I would stop in all the time, knew the guys, they knew me, tours, hang out. It kind of like Ben kind of took me under his wing. It was a great mentor to me. And then they formed the North Shore Fire Department in 1995. So that was a win for me because it was like all new guys to meet as they like got transferred around. And I became an explorer through the Boy Scouts of America when I was 14. Actually, I'll back up. When I was in seventh and eighth grade, the principal at my school's husband was a lieutenant with North Shore, and he set up two ride-alongs with the battalion chief. I had to drag my grandfather along with me because I needed a chaperone. He was your classic, like, you know, do a guy that just was, you don't want to be a fireman. He was a dentist. He's like, you want to be a doctor? Don't waste your time with the fire department. All they do is sit around in recliners all day. And the first ride along, he, you know, gets right in there. He's sitting at the kitchen table with these guys. And, you know, this guy, Greg Sikora, is a, you know, diehard Packers fan. So they talk about the Packers. They argue about the Packers. There was a paramedic squad leader, like a paramedic lieutenant, Tom Seiberg, that ended up talking to my grandfather about the paramedic program and, you know, the things that they could do. And after that first ride along, my grandfather was completely team fire department and was probably my biggest cheerleader in my fire service career. I got into the Explorer post, which was great. And then they had started this cadet program through a high school in Glendale, which is just one of the seven communities that makes the North Shore up. You go every afternoon, your junior and senior year of high school, you go to the firehouse. They would send you through fire one, fire two, hazmat, EMT, if you wanted. So I was able to work in conjunction with the cadet, the head of the cadet program at the time, this guy, Bob Lewis, who was a driver in the North Shore HEO, they call him heavy equipment operator. And we got it into my high school. So half of my junior year, I did it. And then my whole senior year, they sent me through fire one. I didn't do any of the other classes because I was swimming. So that ate up a lot of my afternoons. But I got to go to the firehouse every afternoon, pick one of the five and ride along. And once I got my fire one, I could, you know, throw an air pack on and operate with the guys. And then when I became 18, I was able to like move in. They had like a very small paid on call contingent that was left over from pre-consolidation days. And same thing, I could call up, get permission, go right along, you know, spend 24, 48 hours, 96 hours if I really wanted to at the firehouse is just kind of like an extra on the crew. And it was training and that was it, man. That I guess that's, yeah, a long-winded way of answering how I got into the fire service.
All right, so you're 18. You have all your most of your credentials that you need to go interior and so forth. So how do you transfer from Wisconsin to New York?
So I ended up going to Springfield College in Springfield, Massachusetts. They had an emergency medical services management program. And one thing about the Midwest is it's a lot of fire-based EMS. So North Shore, you were a fireman, you got hired as a firefighter, and then it was actually a promotion to be a paramedic. You took a test, you got selected, you know, there's a little bit more money. And then they had like these paramedic first responders. So like you could be a medic, but maybe you're driving, you know, at the time ladder two or truck 82 as it is now. They'd give you a little tackle box full of meds and a monitor, and then you could, you know, you would start operating as a paramedic until the med unit got there. And a friend of mine, or a friend of my father's, was a captain in Milwaukee, and he was a med, and also worked on a busy one of the busy inner city engine companies. And I was like, wow, that's great. Like, that's, you know, he's going to fires and he's a med. So I was like, you know, if I'm going to come back here and have to ride on ambulance, like, I might as well do it to the best of my ability. And the Springfield program offered you management classes and you got to be a paramedic. And it wasn't like one track or the other. They melded them really nicely. Excuse me. So I ended up going to Springfield College, got my paramedic, got my degree. I was actually offered a job in North Shore, my senior year. And after some conversations with a couple of guys back home and some of the things I'd seen on the East Coast, I turned it down. And then and I stayed. I got hired as a paramedic in the city of New Britain, Connecticut, right out of college. I worked there for 2 years, full time, and then got picked up by the East Hartford Fire Department, in Connecticut. Did 6 years there as a firefighter paramedic, and then I went to New York City.
Okay, so my question to you is, was New York City always on the radar, or did it just happen that way? Did you have some people on there?
So growing up, New York was always, it's New York, right? Like, everyone looks at New York. Obviously, you know, growing up in Milwaukee, also a tremendous job. Chicago was right there, another great job. But like, New York was just always like, you know, the dream job. And going to college, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours from the city, you know, I had friends of mine from high school that were going to school in New York City, so I'd go down and see them. So it was kind of like, it was a dream, you know, definitely like a dream job. And yeah, I will. Yeah, it was always a dream job that, well, I'll just be brutally honest, 'cause I don't, like, it is what it is. I was part of a discrimination lawsuit. So in 20, the beginning of 13, ended 2012, the Justice Department called and said I was discriminated against on my test, and was I interested in moving forward with it? So I was very hesitant because I know how the fire service is. And I reached out to a couple of friends of mine that were in the New York City Fire Department at the time, who were and are very well respected. And they were basically like, listen, if you come in and you go through with this, like, basically, don't be a shitbag and you'll be fine. And so, you know, I talked to these two guys, a retired guy who's very well respected and well known. And everyone basically said that anyone who tells you they wouldn't move forward with their dream job for the New York City Fire Department is lying. And to do it and just, you know, be humble and be quiet and don't think that you know, like, you deserve the time or whatever they offer you. And so that's basically what happened. I ended up having to retake the test, retake my physical agility, the run, et cetera, and then enter probie school July of 2013. And truth be told, like, they were right. You know, I not a single issue from anybody on the job, like a couple jabs here and there, but like, who's not going to make those jabs? And it has, you know, been one of the better choices in my life to do. So I'm, you know, pretty happy.
Okay.
Very happy.
My question to you, which I mean, because you are the first FDNY, and I heavily talk about FDNY a lot. How was it going through the academy? Like, was it surreal?
So I was a pretty big New York City buff. I watched the videos, The Bravest, Brothers in Battle, Brotherhood, like all these videos, especially Brotherhood, right? Post 9/11, follows these guys through probie school into sock companies. And it was surreal. Like it was, the Rock is a wild place. It was very different from my experience in the Connecticut Academy because they own us, right? Like it's the New York City Academy, we're New York City firemen or probies, right? And so they keep you late. You come in super early. They punish you for being, doing stupid things. You get 2 minutes for lunch because, so and so messed up. Like you eat lunch out on the line in a plank position because this guy was talking during a lecture. Oh, you guys didn't do great on, PT. So we're gonna run you tomorrow. We're gonna have this ultra marathoner run you around, Randall's Island and into Manhattan. So it was, and then on the other side of that, like just learning from, guys that worked in, tremendous companies are now teaching you how to be a fireman. And it was pretty wild. And then to see, companies that I knew from being a buff come in and out of the Rock and, possibly see some guys that were, in some of the videos. Obviously, one of the, one two of the big fitness guys for my class at the time are very well known in the Brotherhood video. And one of the lieutenants has a pretty famous speech that, I got to, it was given to me by, and guys play that speech all the time on Instagram. And I got it, firsthand, and he knew my name and he shook my hand when I graduated. So it was, yeah, it was definitely, it was a wild experience. Obviously my class was the hardest class that they've ever had. But it's no, but it was good. It was a wild time. The tough part was being away from the family.
Oh, yeah.
18 weeks is a long time. It was, it, and my wife carried the team at home, and I'm forever in her debt for that. But 18 weeks is a very long time of, 3:30 wake ups and 10, 11 o'clock bedtimes.
Yeah.
So
Okay. And I'm assuming it's Monday through Friday.
yeah, Monday through Friday.
The typical 8, or I don't know what time it starts, 7 to 5, 4-ish, or it all depends.
It depends, man. Like when we first started, they're always watching you, the DIs, right? So they have the drill instructors, who kind of manage the class, and they are the disciplinarians, no different. I was in the military, but I assume no different than the military. And then they just have the regular instructors. And the instructors are great. Like they don't really get involved in any like discipline, but if you're screwing around during class, and you're not listening, they'll just tell the DI, and then the DI is just going to smoke you. So they're watching you from the second you park your car and cross the street onto, and get on the Rock property. They're watching how you walk in, right? We weren't allowed to walk on the sidewalk. So we had to walk, we were in the street, and you have to walk, be with a buddy. You can't be caught by yourself, right? Or, they smoke you. You better be moving with a purpose, So they're just constantly, constantly watching. And it was, well, I actually just forgotten what the question was. So please
No,
repeat.
so I was just asking, like, the Monday through Friday,
Oh,
5-ish, and
yes,
things like
that's what
that.
it's. I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine.
We would, like in the early weeks of class, like we were meeting early. Like
Okay.
you get assigned a squad with a squad leader and an assistant squad leader, and we were meeting in the parking lot at like 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, to make sure we were squared away. We had everything, our uniforms were squared, and we would march in. You go into the auditorium, you'd study. you would behave, or you would get, they would get you. And then end time, yeah, like they had an early session and a late session class. But even when you're in the late session, you're coming in super early, almost as like you're the early session, because you don't want to be late. You don't want to be, you don't want to be the ones getting caught for, skating in there, because there's no like coming in right at, let's say, 7 o'clock. Like, you're there at six. We're raising the flag at 6:30. We're standing on the line ready for inspection at 6:35, and then yeah, you get out, whenever you get out, 3, 4 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Okay.
And yeah, that was it, Monday through Friday. Mid class Wednesdays, you were doing EMS, the CFRD program. You'd go to Fort Taunton and be taught by the EMS instructors. But the DIs were still there. You were still, it wasn't like a break from the rock. In those days, same thing, like an early class and a late class, an actual a true late class, like 4 o'clock.
Okay.
And you were the late class, and then maybe you were early on, Thursday. So you're, 4 to 10, 4 to 11 for class, 3 to 11, whatever it would be, 3 to, and then you're due at the rock at, 5 a.m. So, quick turnaround.
Okay. And of course, I'm assuming while in the Rock, you learn both aspects of the job, engine company and ladder company functions, correct?
Yeah, so what they have, and I don't want to say I'm not a senior guy by any stretch, but my memory is shot. So they have different teams. So it's I want to say like six teams maybe. Like team one is, we'll say, engine ops. Team two is ladders. Team five is the rope team. So you learn about your PSS, the life-saving rope. Whatever. Like every team has like a different specialty, and you learn engine stuff, you learn truck stuff. It's an equal, one isn't heavier weight than the other, because you could come out like my class, some of the guys went to trucks. The class before us, everyone went to engines. Excuse me, but my class, guys went to engines, guys went to trucks. And then they have like the cycle, and you see certain teams each day. You're always doing PT. Sometimes you're, like we're peace officer training or hazmat training, whatever it is, gets like sprinkled in. But yeah, definitely engine and truck work was the heart of the academy.
Okay. All right. So we'll fast forward. You get done with the academy. You made it through. You're officially sworn in. What's your first assignment?
So I went to Engine 214 in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, the Nut House engine, quartered with Tower Ladder 111. I didn't know much about Brooklyn. I really wanted to go to the Bronx. I knew about the Bronx from being a buff. There was some, I had a friend who helped me out, who was basically like, "Listen, you're going into the academy. Keep your mouth shut." He was like, "We have engines that will make the slowest engine in East Hartford look like the Warriors." And he's like, "And then we'll, try and get you somewhere good." And when the assignments, you basically the day before, for my class, I think it was like the day before graduation, you're going to get your assignment. So it's like a big, guys are trying to figure out where they're going. Some guys think they're going places that they don't end up going. And I was like, okay, like I had a good suspicion of where I thought I was going. And the senior drill instructor grabs me, and he's like, "I'm not going to tell you where you're going, because that's on, it was the time Chief Sullivan was the chief of Proby School. So Chief Sullivan gives the assignments." He goes, "But where you're going, it's not like the most popular engine per se. Like it's not a 290 or a 75 engine. But he said it is very well respected, and it's hard to get into. So congratulations." Okay. So they say, Hilliard 214, Sean McCarthy 214. So I'm like, "What's 214?" A good friend of mine turns to me. He's like, "Bro," he goes, "Really? 214?" I said, "John, I don't know anything about two, you know, what is two?" He goes, "It's 111 truck." I was like, again, like I'm not a big Brooklyn guy. He goes, "Nut House." He goes, "You're gonna be fine." And I was like, "All right, cool." So Yeah, 214 engine, 495 Hancock Street in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn was my first assignment, and it was awesome. They always talk about Brooklyn, quick turnouts, wearing your bunker gear and quarters, because engine companies are close to each other. The like wives' tales of like fighting at boxes and stuff, because you get whatever, but I was like, holy cow, like, all right, like this is wild. And I was going there with Sean McCarthy, who's in my squad, and a guy, Mike Esposito, who's going to 111. So it was the three of us going to the Nut House. And yeah, that was my first assignment, 214.
Okay. You mentioned a name. I want to say I've heard that. You said Mike Esposito. Does he teach truck company stuff or stuff with ladders?
Nah, Mike doesn't, to the best of my knowledge,
Okay.
teach anything.
Okay. So that's your assignment. You walk in there. So from the get-go, the tempo of that station, the tempo of the Brooklyn area, that was shown to you right away, like, this is how we do things.
100%. We went, the three of us together. Guy Jimmy Cadell was at the door, like the door was up, the apparatus door. It's a single apparatus bay door that was up. He's like, guys are here. Like they kind of greeted us. It was, very nerve-wracking. And right away, we have the quickest turnouts on the job. Guys are wearing their bunker pants and quarters. Because of that, there is no, they don't read the ticket off. They ring the bell. They ring bells. When the beep boop goes off, it just says engine or ladder. But they, from back in the day, they just ring bells. Three bells and one is the engine, three and two is the truck, three and three is everybody. And the house watchman will, kind of read the ticket off as guys are getting dressed. But like you're on that rig and you're out the door, and you got to be good at getting, you got to be good at getting dressed. You got to be good at putting your SCBA on in the rig. You're off the rig, you're on, the engine guys, we go right to the back step, to await, see what's going on. And that was the tempo of Brooklyn, man. It was good. It was a great firehouse to be a probie. You were held accountable. If you screwed up, it wasn't like they would come down on you, but in a very, I don't like in a way that educated you,
Okay.
It wasn't like malicious. It wasn't like they're trying to, trip you up or anything. Like you were taught how to be a New York City fireman. You were taught the Nut House way. Nut House had a tremendous reputation on the job. They went to lots of fires back in the, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Obviously the area now is like changing a little bit, but they're still, doing very well. And it was yeah, it was good. It was a very good place to be a probie.
Okay. What are the minimum staffings on engines and ladders across the board?
All right. So every truck in the City of New York Fire Department has five firefighters and an officer. Every engine, with the exception of, so every engine has a minimum of four firefighters and an officer. And then a couple of years ago in our contract, we got 20 engine companies to have five firefighters and an officer. And the HAZTAC engine companies also ride with five or start the tour with five. The caveat to the 20 is if someone goes sick or whatever happens, someone has to, go take emergency leave, they call the division, and then that fifth man from one of some engine company will get shipped to another firehouse to cover, to make that engine have four. Rescues ride with six, five and one. Squads ride five and one, and then hazmat is seven and one, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, I think,
Okay.
yeah.
Okay. You guys don't go below that. Like, that is your
Correct.
standard.
Well, that's the standard. companies can respond with like one less if you get down to I'm not 100% sure on the like if you get down to three on the back step, like they just have to let they'll let the chief know they're responding understaffed, or like there's different variations, understaffed or undermanned.
Okay.
But you do hear truck companies like, yeah, we're responding with four, which typically just means that they won't have an OV. So sometimes they'll start an additional truck out, or if the engine's riding short, they'll start an additional engine out. And then they'll communicate with second due OV to be like, hey man, we don't have one, like you're it. But for the most part, it's always out the door with the minimum for whatever your company is normally.
Okay. All right. And so on the engines, of course, you have the driver or chauffeur, officer, and then what are the positions on the back of the engines?
So for the what would be a four-man engine, nozzle, backup, and control. And the five mans have nozzle backup door control.
Okay. And then on the truck?
Truck is going to be your can man, forcible entry of the irons guy, OV and roof. Squads are typically when they're an engine, first, second, or some third due boxes, you have nozzle, backup door control. And then like squad 41, we have the can, irons. Roof and hook. Some of the squads do, for the most part, that's all like similar names. But what they carry is, might be a little like might vary from company to company. And then rescues are the same. Can, irons, hook, roof, and chauffeur.
Sure. Okay. I got most of the names, but the one that kind of piques my interest is what is control?
So the control man, all of our hose loads are dead, so we control our own stretches. So you are in charge of basically from the pump panel to either the door or the backup man. When I was in 214, the control man also got off and checked the hydrant. You'd help the chauffeur hook up, but then you're at the back counting how many lengths we have, and off. And if it's, let's say, six lengths, you take that coupling. You break it, you go to the chauffeur, hey man, six legs. And then the chauffeur goes from there. And then control man is just, chasing the kinks. And he gets up to, close to the backup man or the door, just communicates with them, pump and hose. And then, you try and kind of conserve your air so that when, if or when the nozzle and backup, run out of air or vibro alert goes off, like you can move up and take over the line, as it's like your line, right?
Okay.
And then sometimes you got to leapfrog the second due because we always, for the most part, we pair our engine companies up. So first and second due get the first line in place. And then same thing, third and fourth due get the second line in place. But even though there's a second due control, it's still your stretch to control. So even if they offer like, oh, hey man, I got it, go ahead. No, this is ours. Like you're still counting the lengths. And then, you just kind of, weave in and out of them to get up to, the your backup man.
Okay.
And you would just be, essentially ahead of the second through nozzle.
Another word you mentioned, and I heard it just a couple months ago, and I went to a conference in Greensboro. Tim Klett mentioned lengths.
Yep.
What does that equal in feet for you guys?
50 feet. One length is
50.
50 feet.
Okay.
All of our hose at present are, 50 foot lengths, the 2.5 inch and 3/4. So we just count our lengths, give it to the chauffeur. He does quick, friction loss math, and then, and maybe elevation math, and then away we go.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Now I know. I
All
didn't
right.
want to, I forgot to ask Tim during the
Sure.
break, and I don't want to ask somebody else because they might give me the wrong answer. So now 50 foot was a length. Okay.
Yeah.
All
Yep.
right. All right. Perfect. So my first question to you, official question on this list is what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So for me, like aggressive is a couple of things. It's being ready, right? It's being smart. Like I want to get in there and I want to, push down the hallway and make the fire room or, find the victim or whatever it is. And I don't want to be a coward. But I want to be smart. I don't want to be, like I feel like sometimes guys are like, oh, whoever, Jim Bob is super aggressive. And it's like, well, Jim Bob is, going into a window that is, floor to wall ceiling and, floor to ceiling fire, excuse me. And I don't know if that's really aggressive or, just stupid. So I guess like to me, like the aggressive fireman is the guy that is ready, that knows his job, is in the right position, and makes the move when necessary. Doesn't yeah, and make smart moves and smart decisions.
Okay. All right. With you, I'm assuming after a while you transferred out of the nut house and went to another assignment,
I
correct?
did. I left the nut house in June of 2015. So just I did a year and a half there, and transferred up to Engine 62 in the North Bronx.
Okay. How important is it for you to surround yourself with individuals that actually care about the job where you won't become a shitbag?
Yeah, well, so super important, right? Your reputation, the fire service is everything. The worst thing they can say about you is, he's a good guy, the nut house, you were surrounded by guys that were into it and tremendous, because if you weren't, like, then they got you to leave, or you would leave yourself because it was just, too much for you. And then when I went to Gun Hill, it was the same thing. The engine at the time was doing, 67, 68, 6,900 runs a year. The truck is doing 44, 4,500. Like, so you're there because you want to be there, right? Like, no, we're fortunate in the fire department that we have 197 engines and 143 truck companies, and you are working in one of the busiest ones. There's somewhere else you could go if you wanted to slow down, so to work in places, that are busy, and to work in places with good reputations and good traditions, like, you pretty much automatically surround yourself with guys that are, into it, like my, not as I'll say into it, because like-minded, like, I'm a sick buff, and not everyone is a sick buff, but the guys in both places, like, that we were drilling, they wanted to drill, we knew our job. There was no, it's kind of same thing. Like, you either fall in line or you put your paper in to go somewhere else.
Okay, that's a lot of runs for a year.
Yeah.
But the thing is too, you guys don't always work like 24 hours. You do like 10s and 12s,
So
right?
our official schedule is a 9-hour day and a 15-hour night. You do 2 days, you get 48 hours off, but it's not like, so if I work Monday day, Tuesday day, I get Tuesday night off, all day Wednesday, Thursday day off, and then I would be back in Thursday night, Friday, and then I would be off Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then I would go back in day tour, 48 off. And then once a month, you get 72 hours off after one of your day shifts. But we're very fortunate that we can work mutuals. We have the untraditional 25 group chart, whereas you guys might have three or four groups in your department, right? And like, when I was in East Hartford, we had group 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
In New York, we have 1 through 25. And everybody in the firehouse gets assigned a group. So, like, for me, I'm in group 17. I line up with my partner, who's in group 5. So when I'm on days, he's on nights, and we just sit down together and we look at the month and we make our schedule. So we do a lot of night tours into day tours. So, like, I go in tonight, I work tonight, I get out tomorrow at 6 p.m. And a couple of times a month, you go in at in the morning for 9 a.m. We change at 9 and 6, so you'd start at 9 a.m. and work till 9 a.m. the next day, like a traditional 24. Listen, like, one of the captain, who was the captain of 62 when I got there, was this guy Brian Russo. His last tour before he promoted to Chief, he did 40 runs on the 24, which was a heck of a way for him to go out. And you know, but there were definitely, especially up there, you were doing 24 to 30 runs you know, regularly. 20, I'd say 20 to 30 runs was, you know, your average 24 up there. Not every 24 was like that, but you know, and you have guys up there that did, you know, the senior man in 62, he got out with 38 years on. You know, he did 35 years in Gunhill. You know, same thing, you know, the truck had some senior bosses and senior guys that just retired. Same thing, you know, 25, 30, 35 years, you know, 32 years of, you know, wild running of, you know, 4,000, 4,500 runs a year. And that's not, I mean, they weren't always that way, but, you know, in recent, I think they crested 7,000 this year. You know, my busiest year there was like 6,900. So it's, you know, it's good. It, you know, keeps you moving.
Oh, I imagine so. It's keeping you moving for sure. And I imagine you don't really see your bed.
No.
Okay.
You try. Well, but...
So you mentioned the key word to me, the senior man. To me, it's a position in some jurisdictions, some departments that tradition, that title holds a major responsibility. It's not just, I've been here for this long, I've earned my keep to not do anything, that you have to do everything. But it's the role of, I know in certain companies, the senior man actually gets, before anything goes to the captain, it kind of goes through him in certain departments, certain stations. Sure. So how important is that role? And are you the senior man, or do you find yourself getting close to that title?
I am a long way from being a senior man. I'm a long way from getting close to that title. I think, you know, the senior man is super important, and he is, you know, like, he kind of leads the company in conjunction with the officers, you know, and he, or the senior men will, you know, dictate company policy. They will hold guys accountable. You know, it might not be the senior guy that comes out and, you know, questions you about something, but he'll talk to, you know, one of the, you know, middle guys and say, hey, listen, you know, Alex did this. What's going on? You know, that's not what we do here. You know, the senior man is an invaluable resource to the company. You know, when I got to 214, Bobby Graber, who had been there for 25 years, probably when I got there, Rich Catalano, Greg Borkwin, and Jimmy Cadell were the four senior guys in the engine. And they knew their jobs. They knew how 214 operated. You know, because they had great senior men before them. And, you know, everything, you know, goes through the senior man. You don't just move a piece of equipment. You don't, you know, decide, oh, we're going to take this nozzle off the rig, or, you know, we're going to, like, they upheld the traditions, you know, and they are what keep the company, you know, a great company. And there are definitely some people in some places that think just because they have time, like, they're senior men. And I'm totally against that. Like, I think it's an earned position, not just a, like, oh, I have 25 years. The guy that had 30 just retired. So I'm the senior guy. If you're not a shitbag, then yeah, that's exactly how that goes. But you don't just get to say, like, oh, I hit my 20. Like, I'm a senior guy. It's like, it doesn't work that way. Yeah, you have time, but, like, you don't, you know, time doesn't get you respect.
Right.
I think, you know, having great senior guys is huge. The unfortunate part of the fire service now is, like, a lot of the senior guys are getting out, and you might have that, like, age, you know, or time gap, because it's maybe a younger firehouse. So maybe the senior guy now in the company only has 15 years. If that guy is good, he's not going to come out beating his chest, like, I'm the senior man. Like, Yeah, he'll answer like, yeah, you know, when they call and say, let me talk to the senior man, like, yeah, it defaults to him. But you know, I think any guy that's worth his weight, like, kind of knows, you know, knows the rules and knows
Right.
that you don't just get to, you know, claim senior man if you were a bag of shit for the last however long, you know.
Yeah.
And the senior man is like a sounding board for a lot of things. You know, they've seen a lot over their career that like you haven't seen. So like, you know, you go to them for questions, you go to them for tactical questions. Like, you know, it happened all the time in the Nut House. Like you'd be like, oh, what did, you know, this happened. Yeah, all right. Like, let's talk to Mac or let's talk to Trezza, you know, and see what they think, you know, see what they know. So it's a senior man is a great resource. It's a you know, a title that in my opinion is earned, not just given. And you know, the true senior men aren't even, you know, looking to be really looking to be the senior man,
Right,
you
right,
know. So
right. Okay. No, well said. Well said for sure. so how did you find yourself at your current assignment? Was that something you wanted or how did that come about?
yeah, so you know, SOC in the New York City Fire Department is definitely like a different animal. You give up first due work, you know, really to go to a SOC company, but you also tend to go to more fires, which appeals to everybody, right? You know, well, listen, we're not operating at every fire we go to. You know, we're not right in the thick of it. Like we might operate in the sense of like we go check the top floor, you know, or whatever, you know, in a non-smoky area. But it was on my radar. I didn't think it would come as quick as it did, but I got a tickle from a friend who was kind of like, listen, there's going to be some movement at 41. Like, go see the captain. You have the time. You need 5 years, to apply, you know, to go and see the captain and interview. You know, go see him, throw your name in the hat, like at least you start the process. And then, you know, in a couple of years, you know, hopefully you get down there. So I went, I saw Captain McHugh and I interviewed. He gave me permission to put my paper in. You know, and then I just was on his list. You know, you call every couple of weeks, you visit, you know, meet the guys. And then it was about a year. I just submitted my app, resubmitted my application for 2020, and he called me in December 29, the end of December 19, and said, I'm bringing you over the end of January. And it was, you know, kind of a shock. I didn't think I was gonna, you know, get there that quickly. Very humbling, and you know, truly an honor to work in that company.
A couple things you mentioned, which I personally like. I know some might not, but I do, is the fact that you said you had to go there and interview with
Yeah.
the captain, and the captain pretty much will go yay or nay if you're worthy of being on this list. So what exactly? I of course there's probably credentials you need to have, certifications, but what else do they look at if you know?
So you really don't need any certifications to go there or credentials. Like there are things that help, right? Like they want, you know, guys that are welders or carpet, you know, guys that can bang nail, like maybe have like a mechanical skill, right? Because we do, you know, a wide variety of stuff in SOC companies. So if you got a guy who banks, you know, is a carpenter, all right, well, when we go to a collapse, like there's a great guy to run a cut station, you know, or be inside measuring and putting stuff up, right? The only thing that really I had that set me apart from some was that I was a paramedic. And, you know, Captain McHugh has told me before, like he likes that. And that was kind of, you know, one of the things that helped me get picked to come over. You know, we do a lot of EMS. We do, you know, not just regular EMS runs, but like, you know, there's EMS that needs to be done in a trench or in a confined space hole or under the train, you know, or possibly, you know, pulling out a downed fireman. So, you have to interview with the captain. He just kind of gets to know you and tries to figure out if you're going to be a good fit for the company. You know, every SOC company is different with what the captains are looking for. But it's also, you know, it's the men. It's, you know, you're coming in with 5, 10, 15 years. You're working with guys that have 20, you know, 15, 20, 25 years. you know, and they want to make sure that it's a cohesive, you know, group. Like, you can't be fighting with guys or, you know, hated by the men, because, you know, when we go out the door, like, it's, you know, it could be for, you know, a really, you know, crappy day for somebody, maybe a fireman. So, you know, and that's kind of it, right? You fill out an application that the job is put together that asks you some basic questions. You know, do you like heights? Do you, you know, can you swim? Are you able to go to classes? And, you know, 'cause there's there's probably 6 months worth of schools that you go to when you go on your detail before you get assigned. And, you know, they just ask you these questions, and then, yeah, you interview with the captain, and he, you know, kind of makes his list. And, you know, for now, the captains still, you know, have a say, for, you know, who they get. And you just, it's a waiting game.
Okay. All right. And can you operate as a paramedic?
No.
Even though you can't. Okay.
No,
okay.
But you know, let's be honest, it elevates your
skill set.
Your skill set, right? Like,
right.
You know, you can understand when a medic is looking for something that you can hand to them, but there's no, like, we're not operating as medics. I'm not putting IVs in or intubating anybody.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Personal question for you. So where do you see yourself? Do you see yourself down the line as a lieutenant, captain? I mean, because you've been a backstep for a while. So, I mean, and the thing is, for me, that's not a bad thing. Some people don't really like that. They're like, well, you know, I think you should promote. But where would you like to see yourself end up?
Yeah, well, I failed the lieutenant's test. So I see myself on the back step, and I couldn't be happier, man. I was in a study group before I got called to go to 41. When I got called for my detail, I kind of put, you know, I put studying on the back burner. Because I wanted to focus on getting assigned, because you have a 1 year period where you're on a detail where they, you know, put you through the classes, they put you through the paces in the firehouse, and you run the risk of, you know, being sent back to the company that you came from. So I opted not to study and focus on 41. And then when they were coming around, you know, when they, all right, COVID pushed the test, you know, back, and I did a little bit of studying, like not like some of the guys that put in, you know, hours per day and are, you know, at the top of the list. And let's be honest, like those are, you know, some of the guys that we want. And then, you know, I was like, oh, I signed up for the test. You know, I'm going to take it. Honestly, I should have taken the overtime that day. But and then, you know, I failed, and I, no one to be angry at. I'm not, you know, I'm not mad about it by any stretch.
Right.
A great
right,
place. Right. When you get promoted, you have to. Obviously, I'd have to leave 41. I'd have to leave SOC. You're at the mercy of the department where they send you. You could end up, you know, truthfully, like in the past years and years ago, you had to go to the ROC and teach probie school. You had to be on a building inspection task force. And you weren't in the firehouse. And then you're, excuse me, at the mercy, you know, all right, okay, you get assigned to whatever division. And now you're traveling around every day in a different firehouse for who knows long until a spot opens up, you know, living out of your car. And,
right.
You know, for me, you know, would it be fun to be a boss? Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've worked for some tremendous bosses, you know, they seem to enjoy it, but I like where I'm at, and I'm happy to, you know, be on the back step.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Let's transition over to leadership, company officers, chief officers, but mainly company officers. We know that there are good ones and bad ones out there, and you can definitely learn your lessons from both. But what does leadership, like, what should leadership look like in your opinion?
So a couple of things for us. Our bosses are non-working entities of the company. They're strictly there in a supervisory role, which is different than a lot of places, right? You know, they carry a little officer tool and a hand light. Some carry Halligan, but you know, they're not humping hose, you know. Listen, at the end of the day, like, do they sometimes? Yeah, of course they do. Like, we're firemen, you know. Do they take a door by themselves? Yeah, maybe, you know, like, if there's nobody there to do it, like, we still don't have a job to do. But, you know, to me, leadership is, you know, having a level head, you know, being open to stuff, not necessarily, you know, not being a dictator, a little more, you know, democratic. And, you know, some of the best bosses that I've worked for have been, you know, very senior guys that have worked in some, you know, real good companies and have a ton of experience and are super humble and aren't, you know, giving you the old, look at my collar. You know, they kind of, they get their respect by the way they carry themselves. And, you know, I've worked with bosses that couldn't find a uniform shirt if it, you know, killed them, or if they do find it, it's wrinkly as can be. And they're the most true, you know, that some of the best bosses I've ever worked for. You know, it's not about the uniform for them. It's, you know, or the rank, like they're, you know, they're just the leaders of the company. They're the leaders of men, and they didn't forget where they came from. You know, they were brought up right. They had good senior men coming up, you know, and that's kind of the other thing is you know, we're very fortunate that we're, you know, we're massive. So you can see some really good bosses. And, you know, as you promote, like, hopefully the guys that are promoting are like, oh, I worked with this guy and he was horrendous. And I worked with this guy and he was awesome, you know, and mold yourself after that guy. So, you know, leadership is, you know, super important. And, you know, some of it, yeah, you might get it out of a book, you know, written by somebody, but a lot of it is kind of learned. And, you know, the good leaders, I think, are just good people in general, you know?
Right. Okay. That one thing with the FDNY is you literally can go a whole career and not. So, like, let's just say me and you were both on the FDNY, but you can literally go your whole career and not see me and know that I was on the department. That's just like how massive you guys are.
It, yes, but it is also a very small department, man, in the sense of, like, you go to probie school with, you know, they almost all start around 300 to 320 guys. And, you know, typically they lose over the course of the class 20 to 30, we'll say. So you graduate 300. By the end of 18 weeks, you know guys in your class. You know, like for me, I'm tall. I have a high-pitched voice, so the drill instructors, you know, would call me Beaker. I would carry, you know, I carried our flag, so I was in the front of the line. You know, so you know guys, right? And you then, as you start to work in places and overtime or details, you know, you end up like knowing someone who knows someone in every firehouse in the city, you know. But yes, they're definitely like, I could walk down the street tomorrow and pass, you know, 15 guys that work on Staten Island and wouldn't have a clue that they were firemen, because I don't, you know, I don't really work on Staten Island ever.
Right.
So yes, it is massive, but at the same time, like, it's small. And if you screw up or you do something to tarnish your reputation, like, mm-hmm. it gets around the job, you know, the telephone, telegraph, telefireman.
everywhere you go,
that's it, you know.
Okay, all right. I had a question. We kind of already talked about that, because you definitely hit it, that your reputation, because I agree, because to me, all you have in the fire service is your last name, and you don't want to ruin that by doing something stupid, saying something stupid, because whether you're FDNY size or my department size, word gets around, and you mm-hmm. just don't want that title to be no. brought upon yourself.
No, like, your reputation is, that's it, man, you know? And you could be a stellar guy for 20 years and do one thing, and that's it. Like, they remember that one thing. And, yeah, the last thing that I ever would want would, you know, and maybe I do have a bad reputation, I have no, you know, but the last thing I'd ever want is to have a shitty reputation, you know, and some, oh yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing too. Like, a lot of people don't understand that term, it's not really a term of endearment. It really just right. means, like, it's their nicest way of saying, yeah, he's shitty, but yeah, he's a good guy. Like, you don't want to be known as that.
No, not at all.
That's funny.
Not at all.
All right. Let's see here. Topic. Let's talk about wellness and truly being there for one another. It's one thing for firemen to poke fun at each other. To me, if you're not being made fun of or getting a little jab here and there, you really should have something to worry about, because that means they might really not like you. But
100%.
The aspect of actually being there for one another. I like how you mentioned the nut house, when it came time to let you know, hey, you did something wrong, they didn't belittle you. They didn't humiliate you. They just, of course, they're going to throw a jab here and there at you, but they let you know, hey, this is what you did wrong. And the most important thing is, this is how you can fix it or improve it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they hold you accountable. And I think slight tangent here, like the fire service lacks that nowadays. Like there is a lot of like you're the bad guy if you hold people accountable. You're the bully if you call guys out. You know, and this isn't like specifics. This is from just talking to, you know, friends. Like, you know, guys don't, you know, approach guys maybe like they used to, you know, and be like, hey, listen, man, like I, you know, you did this and it's not right. You know, it might be like, you know, chatter behind the back and, you know, nice to the guy's face. You know, but even on the fire ground, like we just kind of, you know, I think a lot of people are like, listen, I don't sit in a position of power anywhere. So like it's easy for me to be like, yes, hold these guys accountable, you know. But I'm not a chief. I'm not the one who's going to have to answer to the mayor or the union or whoever. But like so many things, you know, you see it in video. You know, YouTube is a great, you know, it's great, right? Like you can watch everything, and you just, you know, from every job in the world, and you know, stuff goes awry. You know, goes haywire, and you know, kinks in the line or mask malfunctions or ladders thrown upside down, whatever it is. And then it's like, ah, the fire went out. We'll high five. We'll post about it on social media. It's like, yeah, but you didn't do your job. Like, if a plumber came to my house and fixed the pipes, and when I turned the faucet on, it leaked all over my basement. Like, that's not, we're not high-fiving the plumber for that, you know? Like, yeah, great. He came and fixed, you know, he unclogged my drain, but like, yeah, now it's leaking in the basement, but like that's no bueno. And you know, so the same thing with fire service. Like we've just, you know, kinder, gentler fire service, maybe. Like, and it's, you know, kind of, I don't know, man. I'm nervous what the future holds for the fire service because, you know, stuff goes unchecked and you know, guys go not held accountable. So they high five each other after stuff, and it's like, you know, yeah, the we got the door open, you know, we forced the door, but we ended up, you know, donkey kicking it instead of, you know, forcing it conventionally. Or we, you know, yeah, we extricated the patient, but we also, you know, cut the roof off and rolled the dash, and all we had to do was pop the door or bring them out the other side, you know, like stuff like that, where it's just kind of like yeah, yeah, another tangent. Completely forgot what the
No,
question was.
you're fine. You're fine. You're good. You're good. It actually brought me up, made me realize a couple two questions I didn't ask you.
All right.
So the squad is an engine.
Yeah.
They also respond to, like you said, SOC type assignments. And
Yeah.
do you guys also do like cut jobs too?
Yeah, so we have Squad 41 has first and second due engine boxes. So right around us, we go on first end, you know, first due engine and second due engine. We are presently in a pilot program where they took our third due engine boxes away from us because there's a lot of engines around us. So the time, like there were some engines that were closer. And then anything outside of that, we operate as a squad. So we cover roughly from 79th Street on the east side of Manhattan and 90th on the west, all the way to the tip of Manhattan. And we have about half of the Bronx. And then we have where Squad 61 operates as an engine as our squad area. So in those areas, any working fire 1075 gets a rescue in a squad in the city of New York. So we would go to those areas for any, you know, confirmed fire. And then any technical run, high angle, person in the train, trench, person in the water. We go as a squad for those, and then we're also a HAZTAC company. So we might respond in that same squad area as you know, as a HAZTAC engine. So yes, we go on confirmed extrications or cut jobs. That's really the only one we don't, the auto extrications are the ones we don't start out on right away. You know, the fire department has many different like response matrixes. We go on any major and minor technical response in our like in our squad area.
Okay. All right. And what does a first do box look like for the FDY? Like how many engines, how many ladders?
For just like a reported fire, you get three engines, two trucks, and the chief. If they get reports of people trapped or they start taking multiple calls, the dispatchers at their discretion can do what we call loading up the box, which will then give you the rescue, the squad, the normally assigned rescue and squad, or whatever, it doesn't have to be normally assigned, but they give you rescue squad and maybe the fourth engine. So it gets us on the road, and then at the transmission of the 1075, you will get a fast truck assigned. You will get an additional battalion chief that they call like the 1075 chief, and you get the division.
Okay. All
So
right.
it's I don't know, 70 something dudes, 80 dudes.
Right. All at one time, which is, yeah, no, phenomenal, phenomenal. So is it safe to say that the squad and the rescue kind of work hand in hand
Yeah,
ish?
no, absolutely. Like we you know, there's 300, roughly 300 firemen in the Special Operations Command. We all have to go to the schools. You get detailed to cover within SOC occasionally. So you start to know the guys, and you know, we all have a good working relationship. We typically like the first SOC company on scene will like kind of run the event. You know, or the call, and then we just assist them as needed. Obviously, if it's a dive job or something, like we don't dive, the rescues dive, but we can assist them with their equipment, their hoses, tending, you know, whatever, tending the comms line. Just, you know, we're there to support them. Same thing, you know, yeah, across the board, rope, whatever, like whoever gets in first, you know, they basically start the evolution, and the other company will come up and assist them.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Is would there ever be a point where if the rescue squad needed personnel, would they rob it off of the squad if possible, or do they
Oh, like would
like
we go? Well, so needed isn't like they just didn't have the guys coming in.
right, like a couple people get sick.
Yeah, so like I've worked in Rescue One before. Like we within Special Ops, they do, you know, it's our manpower guy. He or she gets, you know, they call the officer and find out how many people are coming in. And if it's, you know, if we let's say have six guys coming in, and you know, squad 61 only has four guys coming in, our extra guy, you know, may go up to squad 61 to cover them.
Okay.
You know, there's a couple other places you could get detailed to driving the rescue battalion. We have two tactical support units, one in Staten Island and one on Roosevelt Island, where like SOC headquarters is. So you might get detailed to go there. You know, you could get detailed into like the hat, like squad guys could get detailed under the hazmat side of things. So one of the tech engines or hazmat one itself. But yeah, you know, we couldn't, you know, they have to maintain a certain number of divers. But you could absolutely find yourself working on a rescue company or rescue guys working in the squad.
Okay. All right. Of course, I do have to ask you, how was it when you got assigned to work at Rescue One? I mean,
It's,
because
you know, it's good. Like,
out of all five rescues, and I'm sure any true rescue guy on the FDY would be like, well, Rescue Two is better, but I mean, it's Rescue One. Everybody knows
yeah,
about Rescue One.
no, it's cool, man. It's a cool place to visit. It's not, you know, somewhere I would like to hang my hat. I like those guys a lot. You know, Manhattan is Manhattan, man. I was like a tourist. You know, it is what it is. It's fun. It's different, you know. It's like as a buff, like yeah, it's neat, right? Like I watched all the videos growing up. You know, to be in that same kitchen or that same work area, you know, it was fun. it was a good time. I mean,
Okay.
I don't know. Squad 41.
Not you're
Not
fine.
squad.
I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot to
No,
get in
that's all
trouble,
right.
man. You're good. You're good.
No, no.
I do have another personal question because, like I said, man, I don't get many FDNY dudes. So, driving, what is it like? Now, I'm from New York, so I know my dad was a limo driver in the city, so I know city traffic. I don't think I could deal with driving an apparatus in any sort, whether it's Bronx, Brooklyn, definitely not Manhattan. I don't understand how. Yeah, I could not do that there. But how was it like trying to navigate through the streets and knowing where the hell you're going?
So, knowing where you're going is like it's driving is good. I like to drive. It's fun. The traffic is wild. People don't care about the siren or the big red truck. So you're constantly on alert, and then being in the squad, like you have these four other guys and an officer behind you that want to get to the fire. So like you gotta be like on your game and know your routes. Like anywhere, I go to my map, the maps, I go to my phone. We're fortunate to have iPads from the fire department that the run comes up and you can hit navigate and it'll kind of give you the direction you're going. I think as you get more time in your company, like you start to learn the area. Like obviously, like I'm a buff, so I know where the firehouses are. And like, all right, who's first due? 95 engine. Okay, well now I know I'm going up to Inwood, right? Because that's where they are, the tip of Manhattan. Who's first due? 83. All right, well I know I'm going to the western or the eastern side of the South Bronx. And you just kind of start to learn it that way. It's definitely like it's nerve-wracking. But it's fun, it's no different than driving anywhere really, other than like that you don't really open the rig up, right? Because it's
Right,
there's so much
you
traffic.
can't. Yeah, I mean, it's a constant like accelerator brake, accelerator brake, accelerator brake. So I always have to ask because I especially like during rush hour, I don't see how you guys do that. But it is interesting that you mentioned that a lot of departments like DC, I know is the tradition of map books, but you guys are able to use technology-based programs.
We all have our phones, probably to a fault, right? The nice thing too, like for squad boxes, is like we might hear something come in that sounds good, but it's not good enough for them to load the box up. So we have a couple minutes. So the chauffeur will start looking, oh, what was that? What was that box number? And then we all have the apps of, Firebox or the FDNY calendar app has the boxes in it. And you can look up the box and then, okay, it's the Grand Concourse and 171 Street. So you kind of like start planning your route before you even you're turning out the door. Or you go to the map or you go to this or oh, what time of day is it? Okay, the Harlem River Drive is going to be packed, so we're going to go just city streets all the way up there. The FDR stinks, so same thing, or turn on this street and you can go a block or two and then cut over and you beat all this traffic where it normally bottlenecks. It's the same thing. You talk to the chauffeurs or you talk to the guys that have been there and have been there for a long time. The seated chauffeur is typically a guy who's been in the company 10, 12 years, so they learn from the guys, back to the senior man thing, right? Like they learn from the guys above them. And if you really want to be a good chauffeur, like you pick their brains and you watch them when they drive, you kind of you pick up their tips and tricks and
Okay. All right. And last question for you. I know I'm holding you up a little bit.
No,
I know, of course, lieutenants, captain, that's all like a written test position, but to be a chauffeur, is that a tested position as well?
No, so you, again, going back to the captains, as a company commander, like we have a chauffeur training school.
Okay.
It's 2 weeks long. It's at the Rock. They have an engine one and a truck one. So you have to, like, you can only be an engine chauffeur or a truck chauffeur. You cannot be both.
Okay.
You can only drive like what you are assigned to. So the second I went from engine 62 to ladder 32, I lost my chauffeur status for
Oh.
driving engines. So then I, you got to go back to chauffeur school. So what happens is the captain, and it's typically, they just kind of do it by seniority in the company, and they just come to you and they say, all right, hey Alex, you want to go to you want to go to chauffeur school, or you're going to chauffeur school? Depends, and yeah, absolutely, Cap. And so it's like, okay, you're going, whatever, in 2 weeks. So you come off the line, and you get detailed to chauffeur school. You go to chauffeur school. It's what is it, 5 8-hour days. And they just train you on, hydraulics, the pumping, the policies. You go out and you drive the rig on the city streets to practice. You drive around Randall's Island. They have you hook up to hydrants as though you were, going to a regular, going to a fire. Excuse me. They have some days where they throw problems at you: burst lengths, open gates, open drains, whatever it is. And every day there's a quiz, a written test, and then you take your final. And then you're blessed as a New York City chauffeur, and
Okay.
I
Oh.
get a nice little certificate.
Uh-huh.
I hang that in my bedroom. No, I'm just kidding.
And then you stay in that. So then once you're deemed a chauffeur, like let's just say squats 41, that is your position every time you come into work.
No, so we have four seated chauffeurs. When that means that those guys, every time they come in, that's where they go. So again, typically that's just, by seniority, right? When I was in 214, it was the top, four guys in the company. 62, same thing. 41, similar. And those guys drive every tour. And then I'm a backup chauffeur.
Okay.
So if, whoever, if Raul is out today, then, I'll drive. Or, and we have a lot of chauffeurs. So we just kind of like, hey, who wants to drive today? And then, when those guys are on vacation, same thing. You bump up, sometimes to drive. Like sometimes it works that way. Sometimes, it's just like, oh, this guy's, the next senior guy, like he'll drive, and you get paid a little bit. Every day you get paid a little more as to be the chauffeur. No, chauffeur's training school just gets you, qualified to drive. And then, it could be 10, 12, 15 years before a seat opens up.
Okay.
Or you could be in a super young company, and I've got 10 years on, and I know guys with 10, 11 years on that are seated chauffeurs in their company just because the company is young. Guys retire, whatever it is, and it's like, with 10, 11 years on, you're the seated chauffeur, which, some guys really like. In a regular company, like for us, it's a little different. Like the engine chauffeurs, they don't operate, so they just drive and stay with the rig. For squad, like our squad chauffeurs are getting dressed when we're a squad and coming in. Truck chauffeurs obviously operate, rescue chauffeurs operate. So but it's yeah, it's good. It's good training. It's good, they keep it to the FDNY, so there's not
Right.
a lot of like, we're not doing a lot of drop tanks and, going to fill
Right.
sites for tanker
Right.
shuttle operations and,
Right.
so it's good.
Okay. And you mentioned I brought up another thing. So I'm assuming the hard suctions that are on the engines, it's just there for tradition, or is it you could potentially have to
No, yeah,
use them?
absolutely. And some of it, like I know chauffeurs that have drafted and train on drafting. Good friend of mine brought that drill to 62 when he came there, and just going over, drafting. You absolutely could. That was like, maybe we lose the water system gets hit by, a terrorist or something like that. Like, and the only thing you have is to draft. So now, one of them. And typically the lowest one that you see in the photos is what we use to hook up. We call it our, 10-foot hard suction. We use those to hook up to the hydrant. It's a little bit different than your typical drafting, piece of 10-foot hose. But it allows you know, the engines to get close to the hydrant and, you know, make room for the trucks and stuff. So we do use that for regular hookups. And then typically you see two or three more pieces or sections of hose above that, which are, you know, for drafting purposes.
Okay. All right. I had to ask. I've always
Yeah,
wanted to
yeah,
ask,
yeah.
so now I know.
All
Okay.
right.
All right. Alex, man, seriously, I really do appreciate you coming on and talking. It's always, I just like hearing how different departments hold traditions
Sure.
and how they do different things. But the main thing that I liked with you was you mentioned reputation. Your last name is all you have. And the reason why I started this whole podcast is just don't be a shitbag. Like, be one of the guys that's, I mean, to me, if you're in this profession, it's because you're into the job. Like, you're not here just for a paycheck to wear a t-shirt. Unfortunately, we have people that
Yeah.
do that, but we know who they are. And I just want others to know, like, it really is okay to, if like, try to emulate, try to be that guy or gal that's into the job. There's nothing wrong with it.
I agree, man. I do think, unfortunately, like, you know, the pendulum is swinging in a way in a lot of places where it is more for the t-shirt, the pay, the benefits, than it is, you know, for, you know, reasons why you and I got in the fire department, you know, and that kind of stinks. And I think, you know, the fire service is going to be in for a rude awakening. You know, as morbid as it is, like, we could see more, you know, line of duty deaths in the future because guys are getting into the fire department for different reasons, and, you know, maybe not the what we deem the right reason. And you know, they'll lose that aggressiveness, they'll lose that you know, competency in the job and knowing their job. And, you know, it'll be, you know, a world of like complacency and, this run is nonsense, or we have gone to this building 19 times, like, this is going to be nothing. And then at that 19th time, you know, you pull up and it's out the windows and now you're behind the eight ball. And it's you know, the podcasts like this and the guys that are out training and teaching and, you know, hosting the conferences are hopefully what's going to keep, you know, the tradition of the fire service alive. And, you know, we're not going to be able to weed all those guys out, but like, if we can do a good job of, you know, getting as many out as we can and just continue to surround ourselves with good people, like, we'll be in a great place, man, you know. But it's, yeah, it's going to be difficult. But you know, it is what it is. I think everyone probably goes through that, except probably sanitation. You know, they probably don't go through that kind of thing. But you know, it's I think the fire service will always be, tremendous, and, you know, we'll always go out, the guys will always go out the door and, you know,
Definitely.
do the right thing as long as the people ahead of them are, you know, teaching them the right way, keeping those traditions alive.
Absolutely, absolutely. And before I end it, I always like to ask the guests, how much longer do you have, or how much, or you know. Do will you go? Because you know, you hear some FDNY guys 38, 40 years.
Yeah, I will go. I don't know, man. You know, I'll go as long as I can. You know, I'll go as long as it's fun, and as long as the guys are good, and you know, as long as I can. They're definitely like, I'm not aging out, I can tell you that. Like, I'm not working at, you know, until I'm 65. That's when, you know, they force us out. I think that's, you know, God bless those guys that do it. But that's not going to be me. But I just, you know, keep on keeping on every day, and until it's not fun anymore. You know, when it gets daunting and I stop liking going to work, like, then I know it's time to get out, because
Right.
that's usually when you end up, you know, hurting yourself or hurting somebody else.
Right. Okay. All right. But to me, I don't see the FDNY not ever being fun. Because every day, dude, every day or every other day or within the week, all the fire emergency services pages that I always follow, something's always going on one of the five boroughs in New York City. So
That is very true.
it's never a quiet day in New York City.
That is very true. We are, you know, unfortunate. I'm fortunate that I get to practice my craft maybe a little more than most.
Right. Right.
So it makes everything worthwhile. And I'm truly humbled and honored to work in 41 and be able to go to the fires that we go to with the reputation that the company has, and work with the guys that I work with, and look at the list of guys that worked there before me. Like it's pretty wild, and the city is a wild place of constantly changing stuff, and it really keeps you sharp.
Definitely. Definitely. All right. Alex, like I said, I truly appreciate you coming on, man, giving some insight for those FDNY lovers out there that wanted to know things. So I just have to say thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. This was good. Very honored to be asked to be on this. I really, yeah, I appreciate it. I like what you're doing. Keep doing it, and maybe I'll be back.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd love to. I have plenty of more questions I can come up with. I know you got to go into work later, so I'm like, I want to be good with your time. But no, if you're willing to come back, oh, I can load up questions fast.
Absolutely. That'll be all right.
Okay. All
Yeah.
right. Well, I appreciate it.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.